Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Sheltimer, and my co-host Felicity Signal-Reed. Each week at this time, we meet with local people connected with the world of books and writing. Recently, Coburg was host to a literary event, Word Northumberland. And at this event, Blue Denim Press, a publisher from Coburg, presented their new fall line of titles. Today, we have one of those publishers from Blue Denim Press here with us, Shane Joseph. And on the line from Sudbury, we welcome one of those authors, Klaus Jakelski. We'll be speaking with Klaus in a few moments, but first I wanted to ask you a question, Shane. Shane, at Blue Denim Press, how do you go about deciding what kind of book to publish in any given year?
Well, in any given year, we get between 20 and 30 manuscripts that look promising. We don't have the bandwidth to publish them all, so we narrow it down to about 10% of that. So it's either between 2 and 3 books that get published a year in our trade publishing program. This year we decided we would have a crime theme, so the theme drove what we chose. And then we had this manuscript that came quite late in the submission process, and we were almost closed when I took a look at this one, and I was quite impressed, and so was Sarah. It's a medical thriller set between the United States and Canada, so it does cover both markets. The author is a doctor, so he has first-hand experience of what he's talking about. And it covers some of the contemporary issues of managed medical care versus private medical care, which is a hot debate right now in the United States. Klaus had woven this thriller in with these big themes that are topical today, and also told it in a very entertaining and fast-paced fashion. So I think that's what led us to pick this particular one. Klaus tells me he's got other books in his pipeline, so we'll have to see how that turns out. But that's basically how we went about it. But something else that we decided to do, because we realized that we were falling short of, trying to help as many writers as we could, is we opened a services section on our website this year. So we're basically offering authors whom we can't publish because we don't have the bandwidth to promote them, we would offer to help on a contract basis produce their books for them, either in paper or electronic form, for them if they wish to self-publish it or submit it to some other publisher. So that started this year, and we hope that that will help kind of balance off the number of manuscripts that we keep receiving.
Great, Shane. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, thank you.
And now I think we should chat with Klaus, who, as I said, is on the line from Sudbury. But first, a little about him. Klaus Jakelski has been a practicing physician since 1978. He's worked everywhere, from the emergency room to the operating room, from the hospital floor to the office floor. He's written columns for a local paper over the years and sits on public boards. He lives with his wife, Kathy, and children, Nicholas and Natasha, in Sudbury, Ontario. Klaus is equally at home in the wild or in big cities. His favorite cities include Toronto, Boston, and Berlin. So welcome, Klaus.
Thank you very much for having me on the show.
Oh, you're welcome, Klaus. How do you juggle between being a doctor and writing?
Well, it's not an easy task, but to tell you the truth, I enjoy an excellent read, and I enjoy the creative process of writing immensely. I'm not much of a television person. I rarely watch. I have very few select shows that I choose to watch. And so I really do have the time to read and to write.
Good. And do you write every day? Do you have a set way of coming at it?
When I've got a project on the go, I write almost every day in the evening. It all depends upon where the mood and where the story takes me. So some nights I'll excuse myself after helping with the dishes and head upstairs. I might be in bed at 11 o'clock. I might be in bed at 1 o'clock. I might be in bed at 3 o'clock. It all depends on what the story's doing or what I'm doing with the story.
Well, so it's running your life, kind of like my cats.
My dogs run my life, yes, and so does my writing.
Would you like to tell us just a little bit about your novel, Dead Wrong?
Sure. Well, Dead Wrong is the first novel that I've completed. It is a medical political murder mystery set in Boston. It's a fast reading novel couched very, very much in the vernacular of New England, with a single Canadian principal character in it. Basically, the story is based on the trial that occurred in Toronto, the Susan Nellis trial, where she was accused of murdering multiple influence with digoxin overdose. This just takes the digoxin overdose idea to New England. It's a good story. It outlines the lives of some interesting people. It starts with some operations at the hospital, and bedlam breaks loose when the police come in with their investigations into the 34 murders. Carries on with two main characters, Anne Maples, an investigative news reporter, and Peter Martin's a young surgeon from Canada who break the story open when nobody in authority will listen.
Okay. Now, I'm interested in why New England? You have a Canadian protagonist. Why New England?
I spend a lot of time in New England. I'm very familiar with Boston. A lot of interesting characters that I've met there over the years, interesting things I've done, and it's just a nifty place to write about. And there's the flip side of the coin, of course, which is the United States is a bigger market than Canada.
Right. Do you see this book turning into a series at all?
There is a possibility for that. I've been thinking about that. It does have some interesting characters. I've got some feedback from a number of people. They really like some of these characters and want me to keep on writing about them.
Right.
At the present time, I have another project sort of that I've gotten into. But they make an awful compelling case for continuing with these characters.
Yeah, I think you should bring Peter Martin's The Young Surgeon back to Canada and set one in a Canadian hospital. That might be interesting.
That's always a possibility.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll move them to Toronto.
Yeah. Could we maybe hear you read from your book?
Sure, you could.
Thank you very much.
So I'm going to bring you in here where one of the principal characters is coming back home on Sunday night to his dear wife. And his main claim to fame in this story is that he's one incredible philanderer. So here we go. Roy Purvis got out of the Jaguar and slipped under the closing garage door. The house, dimly lit by the glow of one lamp from a short distance up the street, was awash in the moving shadows of great trees. Their leaves rustled rhythmically in the hot, light wind. Some lights glowed dimly inside. Roy looked past the house and saw a huge harvest moon rising out of the ocean in the east. Noisy crickets on the dark grassy embankment beyond his house added a chorus to the sound of the lightly rolling waves, folding themselves into the rocky shore below. He realized that he could not stand there forever, and he realized also that he'd handled such situations before. Lastly, he needn't remind himself that he'd been divorced 3 times, all over similar circumstances. So, he let himself in and went upstairs. His wife was not in the bedroom. He quickly unpacked his overnight bag. The house was quiet. Too quiet. He heard his breath as he walked down the stairs. A dim table lamp in the far corner of the living room cast irregular shadows over the furniture and the custom Taiping carpet that covered the hardwood floor. He went to the kitchen. Dark. The door to the balcony was open. He looked outside. No lights. Under the umbrella, he saw his wife, silhouetted darkly against the reflections of the moon twinkling on the water. She had her feet curled up beneath her bottom and rested her head on her left hand. There was a half-full martini pitcher beside a full glass on the patio table to her left. Roy could see that there was still some ice in the pitcher. That could be good or bad. It could mean that she had just sat down and the ice in the pitcher had not yet had a chance to melt. On the other hand, it could mean that at 10:45 at night, Patricia was on her second pitcher. Knowing his wife, the latter was more likely. Roy opened the storm door carefully, stepped outside, and closed the door just as quietly. Patricia's silhouette did not stir. She said, "Hello, Roy. How was your sailing?" She didn't speak in an unfriendly tone. Neither did she turn around. "The sailing was very nice, thank you, dear." He held still. "I'm having a little martini. Get yourself a glass if you care to join me." She spoke clearly, distinctly, not as if she were feeling the effects. "No, thank you," he said demurely. "I think I'll pass." "That is our problem, isn't it?" "What, dear?" He felt his heart miss a beat. "We're forever passing each other." She paused a moment. "Did your heart skip a beat just now?" His heart missed a beat again. "No, dear," he said politely. "You're lying," Patricia said in a flat, even tone. "I'd say you're scared practically shitless, and right now your heart is skipping plenty of beats." She finally turned to face him. Roy felt his heart choking, racing in his throat. He wanted to grab his throat with his hands, but instead, he sat perfectly still, concentrating on his composure. "That's more like it," she said soothingly. "Now we both know what we're talking about." He could see her face melt into a moonlit smile. Why didn't he know that Patricia knew? Why had he never seen this side of her before? He asked, "What do you mean, dear?" "Don't take me for a fool, Roy, Purvis," she growled. "Darling, the neighbors," he tried to be appeasing. "To hell with the neighbors," she hissed. "Let's talk." "Yes, dear." He would agree if it made her happy. Actually, he might agree to just about anything. "Have a martini. It'll help you relax." "Thanks. No. Get enough this weekend, and I don't mean drink, Roy. I mean enough of baby doll." She cocked her head and smiled, secure she had him cornered. Roy remembered advice a lawyer had once given him about situations like this. Deny, deny, deny. Patricia might be a little beyond that point. What was she up to? "Well, I think it's sad that we can't have a little bit of fun together. I think it's sad that we don't spend more time together. I think it's sad that we see other people. Don't you think so?" Roy knew that the "we see other people" she referred to, in fact, referred to him. Yes, the relationship was sad and dishonest. It had gone astray. Had there been something in him that had wanted to get caught? He said to her, "Yes, I think so." "Well, Roy," she lightened up, "it's sad, but it isn't." Patricia picked up her drink, took a long sip, and looked out to sea. "I think there are many redeeming qualities in just about any social arrangement, don't you?" Oh, she was clever. She'd worked him right into a corner from which she could extract almost anything. "Yes," he approached the topic cautiously, "sometimes." "Well, Roy, what do you think I was doing while you were tussling with baby doll?"
Thank you, Klaus. And now we'll take a short break.